In last week's episode, we discussed the distorted writings of a Professor Samuel Heilman and how he misrepresents ultra-Orthodox Jews. But Heilman is not the only academic who I've found to do this. In my experience, there are others. Specifically, in the academic world in the field of Judaic studies. It ranges from history to comparative religion, places like that, Jewish history, who, using a range of devices, from, on one hand, outright lies, to, on the other hand, over-reliance on subjective opinion as opposed to facts, portray a gross, bizarre, odious misrepresentation of an entire population of people, namely ultra-Orthodox Jews. The question that I'm addressing today is why this is so, how prevalent is it, and what is there about the Judaic studies sector that could cause this? I'm going to pose these questions to my guest today, Professor Norton Mezvinsky. Professor Mezvinsky comes from an Orthodox family, but after a certain point in his life gave up Orthodox Judaism. He was more associated with the Reform Jewish religion, and he was a very close friend of Elmer Berger. He was also associated with the Reconstructionist religion, and he has an affinity for Mordechai Kaplan. And I mention this only to show that we're not talking about somebody whose background would give him a particular bias towards ultra-Orthodox Jews. He completed his PhD in history at University of Wisconsin and did postdoctoral studies at Harvard University. He was a professor for decades, currently emeritus, at Central Connecticut State University. He's the author of a number of books and was very involved with Jewish activism all throughout his life, starting with his father's charitable work, which we may hear about shortly. Norton Mezvinsky is currently the president of the International Council for Middle East Studies, a think tank based in Washington, D.C., of which I serve, full disclosure, on the board of directors. With us today, Professor Norton Mezvinsky.
So, Norton, am I wrong in my perception of this, how should I call it, this, I don't know, a bias for sure, a prejudice, even it goes towards in the direction of what I would call an agenda by these academics, the academic community, just the Jewish studies academic community against Orthodox Jews in general, which include rabbis and stuff, and the more ultra they are, the worse it gets. The apex of which are the Satmar Hasidim. They really don't like them. You know, you kind of travel in this world, or used to travel in this world.
I do travel.
You do travel. Okay, so you're still traveling in this world. So am I wrong? What is there about this? I mean, I deal with all sorts of people, including in the academic world, you know, and I don't get these vibes, and I don't see these misrepresentations, you know, be they deliberate or accidental. I don't see it. I see it by this particular group. I see it amongst, like, the Judaic studies ones, the Jewish history ones, these type. Am I off?
I would not say you're off totally, mm-hmm. but I would say that if you put it the way you put it, it's too much of a generalization.
Okay.
In other words, are there people like that? The answer is yes. But are there others who are not like that? That answer is also yes. So it is a generalization. And therefore, it seems to me that, as is the case with most generalizations, to really be clear in what we're saying and in the messaging, we need to be specific.
Okay, so be specific, Norton. Could be that I'm only feeling and noticing those that are amongst the ones that you described that do have this bias, right? Because I don't really function in this universe, and this is just what I'm noticing. So what is it with those, without generalizing, those that are there, I'm not even talking what percentage of them it is, but what's driving this?
Well, I'm going to suggest something that may explain why you feel like you do. And I think it has to do with being anti-Zionist. In other words, I think that you are a good example of this, as far as I know, in instances that I've seen. You and also others like you. When religious Jews are anti-Zionist, then I think that does indeed influence and drive a number of people to whom you're referring, who are in Jewish studies, to attack first the anti-Zionism, and secondly, the purveyor, from their point of view, the purveyor of the anti-Zionism. So I think that is a factor. Now, that's not all of it, insofar as I know. And by the way, it's true that I have some experience with a number of these people and have had for decades, but it's also true that I, of course, don't know all of them. And so I really don't want to appear to necessarily be overgeneralizing.
Right.
But I'm saying that I've known enough that I can say this.
You want to know what this is? Here's what it is. I want to read you something from an article that just came out in a journal called Sapir. It's called The Misuse of Expertise, A Conversation with Jonathan D. Sarna. This is the introduction. It's all about how the Jewish studies, in general, how academia, but in particular the Jewish studies departments, have become not scientific, but political. Okay. And here's the part of the introductory paragraph. The power of the expert has long derived from the assumption that they bring objective, informed, and incisive analysis to the topics at hand. What those outside of academia may not understand, however, is that the standard of academic objectivity has long been eroding. Thanks to the postmodernist rejection of Enlightenment ideals of truth, objectivity, progress, morality, reason, and more, many scholars have come to instead embrace subjectivity, the influence or identity or positionality in understanding the world, and critical theories that argue that the motivating forces behind civilization are struggles for power along the lines of gender, race, class, sexuality, and so forth. What I want to emphasize over here is the last line, because this describes what I'm trying to explain. This idea that the, quote, the motivating forces behind civilization, knockout civilization, the motivating forces behind ultra-Orthodoxy are struggles for power along the lines of tribalism, primitivism, individuality, and simple greed. Look, I just tell you my own experiences. I know you for a long time, and you pretty much know my experiences with these academics. I have this guy who I happened upon his article. Then there was another guy. A guy once mentioned him. Do you not want to say his name? A Harvard graduate, professor of comparative religions. He calls me up one day. He wants to talk to me. From an out-of-town university, he brought a student with him, and he's talking about anti-Zionism. He said that he wants to help people understand or empathize with anti-Zionist Jews to reduce the hate. Sounds nice, right? Okay. So we had one interview, and then I brought some friends of mine over from the neighborhood to discuss it with him, and my wife put out the nice china in his honor. He came with his student. I got a sense, I couldn't escape the sense, that he was unhappy with the fact that the student of his seemed to think that we were very reasonable and making sense, and he came there expecting, I don't know, the Westboro Baptist Church.
Well, okay, all right.
The Westboro Baptist Church. And, all right, he called me again to come over again. He wanted another session. And my friends all advised me against it. They said, there's something up with this guy. He's not all on the up and up. But I agreed. Okay, we had a decent conversation. I mean, he said he wants to have a relationship with me, wants to be friends and everything. But he wouldn't say anything about himself. He says, matter of policy, he doesn't discuss his own religion or his own views. So he's basically just studying me.
You could discuss yours.
No, I have to. That's what he was there to discuss mine. I even signed a paper that I allow him to study me or whatever. So he writes on his Facebook page that I didn't want to be studied. All I wanted is that he shouldn't be a Zionist. And I called him up and I said, where did you get that from? Did I ever tell you you shouldn't be a Zionist? Did I ever hint to you such a thing? He says, well, do you want me to be one? I mean, he didn't lie. That was his opinion, but he just got it out of nowhere.
I, of course, don't doubt that that happened. And I also don't doubt that there are X number of other professors who would have brought students or not brought students to you who would fall into the same category as this guy and do what this person did, which was, let me say, there are other terms I could use, which was totally dishonest. Okay. But on the other hand, I can also think of a number of people in Jewish studies who may be critical of Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox Jews, but they don't fall into that category.
I want to know
they
why.
They would not be like this.
Is there an explanation for the ones that are like this as to why they are like this? I don't get it. I don't find it by non-Jewish academics. I don't even find it by Jewish ones not in this field.
Listen, my guess is that if you worked at it long enough and interviewed enough non-Jewish academics, you would also find some of the same stuff among them. I don't think it's necessarily limited to some number of Jewish academics, but I will say, I will go back to something else that I emphasized earlier. And I think that the something else is illustrated by this back and forth you had when you went back to him and about Zionism, because in my thought and my feeling is that because of what he said and how he answered you, his antagonism was all pegged and keyed to the fact that you were anti-Zionist. And if you were anti-Zionist, and if you as a religious Jew, religious ultra-Orthodox as you are, if you were that way, then you were a danger not only to Zionism, but you were a danger to the Jewish people. I'm saying that he tied this to his anti-Zionism.
You know what? If they would say people who are against Zionism are dangerous to the Jewish people, we could discuss that. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a distorted view of things that have nothing to do with Zionism. We're talking about I would use the word hate, but that's too strong. Definitely a wrong-colored sunglasses. Really, it's...
Yes, but what you're talking about what I would call dishonest people. Now, I think there are honest people who might well still argue with you.
Why are they
that if you are an anti-Zionist, that's dangerous.
That's fine.
But they wouldn't fall into
fine.
This
that's
category.
That's all fine. Okay, no problem. There are people who will say that there are communists are dangerous, or capitalists are dangerous. Everybody thinks somebody else is dangerous. No problem. My question is, what's in it for them, this dishonesty? What's driving it, the dishonest ones? If somebody wants to take money from me and be dishonest, I understand what he gains. What do they gain by this particular type of dishonesty, by painting Jews as primitive, selfish, greedy?
All right, let me put to you another reason And this applies to, unfortunately, to academics who should really know better, but just as it applies to other people, other Jews. When they look at the ultra-Orthodox, and when they see, you mentioned Sattmars. Let me take Sattmars as an example. When they look at them and they see how they look, how they dress, how they carry themselves, and from their point of view, then they say, that gives a bad image of the Jew and Jews to non-Jews.
So there you go. I mean, the problem is... I know that. You know what? The problem is that the non-Jews don't care nearly as much as these Jews.
Let me take that a minute.
Go ahead.
Let me take that. Because I can give a personal family experience that illustrates that same point. I grew up in Ames, Iowa,
right,
in the middle of Iowa.
Uh-huh.
When I grew up in Ames, Iowa, there were a couple other Jewish families in town. That's it. But when I went through school, until I got into my last year of high school, I was the only Jewish student. My father was an Orthodox Jew. He didn't follow all the rules because he figured he had to work on Shabbos. But we were strictly kosher. Everybody in town knew that Abe Mizvinsky, my father, was an Orthodox Jew, and so on. And there was no negative feeling about that. But here's my point that applies.
Mm-hmm.
Almost weekly, if not weekly, every few weeks, we had to Ames, Iowa, which is 27 miles from Des Moines, the capital, we had Hasidic Jews who were out and around collecting for yeshivot, for hospitals, for a variety of things. They would come to Des Moines, the capital, where there was a Jewish community, because they could talk to a number of Jews. But everyone who came, almost everyone, they went 27 miles out of their way to come to Ames, Iowa, to see my father, Abe Mizvinsky. Why? Because not just because they knew he was an Orthodox Jew, but because they knew that he always gave to all of them. Now, but that's not my point. My point is, they would come to town, and they were dressed in how they dress. They looked how they looked. Everybody who saw them in the town knew they were, and people would say, oh, they're coming to see Abe. Now, these were all non-Jews. Did that create a negative image? No, that didn't create any negative image at all.
Not at all.
That underlines what you're talking about. That created even a better image, because they also knew that they came to see Abe because Abe was such a charitable man,
mm-hmm,
who would give to them. So I can tell you that from my own personal experience,
mm-hmm,
and my experience is not just one single experience. There are X number of people, I'm sure, who can tell you the same thing. But from my experience, that illustrates also the point that you're making.
You know, so basically, if I understand you right, what you're saying is this. They're ashamed. That ties in the Zionism thing too, because that's why Zionism was created, really. Because they were ashamed of the traditional Jew. They were really ashamed, and they believed, with the benefit of hindsight, it seems insane today, but this is what these people who later were to become Zionists believed, that it's because the Orthodox Jews, because of these Jews, the way they dress, the way they look, their personalities, which they absorbed the perceptions from the anti-Semites, that the perception of these Jews is such that it causes anti-Semitism and makes people, they're ashamed. They're ashamed to be associated with that.
Let me expand that a little bit. As you may know, in American history, one of the fields that is a fairly recent field, fairly recent means a field as of the last 50 to 70 years, is immigration history. We have lots of immigration history that's written.
Okay.
And we have studies of immigration that are done by people other than historians, but most of the really good studies are done by historians. And it so happens that the greatest number of studies happen to be studies of Jewish immigrants. Okay. And there's a reason for that.
What's that?
Most of the people who have studied this happen to be Jews who are interested in studying Jews. Nothing wrong with that. Okay, now, but here's my point. In those histories, in a lot of those histories, we have documented cases, and they have found the data and the documentation for this. We have cases of Jews who came. We, of course, don't know how many. Jews who came over at a certain time, and either when they first came, maybe not when they first came, but soon thereafter, they didn't want to be identified as Jews anymore because they were ashamed for some of the same reasons you're talking about. So they then went to places. And by the way, it so happens that a lot of them went to southern cities. I'm not saying this is not a condemnation of the South. This is just what happened. They went to southern cities. They changed their name. They wouldn't talk about their background. They joined Christian churches. Why? Because they did not want to be identified as Jews. And they were ashamed of being Jews. And of course, those people, more than any others, would really be antagonistic to the kinds of Jews that we've been talking about. But here's the point. Here's a major point. It also, what was found was that many of the times when they joined a Christian church, even though they were in a Christian church and they were accepted in the church, when many people talked about them, they said, well, that's not Jew. It was known. So I'm saying, but this underlines and illustrates that how they're ashamed. They were ashamed and they of being Jews, and they thought that it was better for them to, since they wanted to assimilate themselves into what they considered to be, not correct assumption, but what they considered to be American society, they had to escape being Jews. And my point is, I have two points. One, with many of them, that didn't happen anyway. And secondly, that was not the best way for them to assimilate themselves. My father is a good example of someone who did the opposite. And my father came here to do it the opposite. He came from Kiev, and when he came, he always told this story. He said, as opposed to many other Jews who felt otherwise, he didn't criticize them, they just felt otherwise. What he wanted to do, he wanted to come to the new world, and he wanted to do in the new world what he could not do in his old world. He wanted to live as an Orthodox Jew among non-Jews, and to live well and to be respected. He became the patron saint of this town that was filled with non-Jews.
You know, it's such a pity on these people. But is there any reason? I guess then the reason why, again, this is just anecdotally just my experience, but I'm like an old guy and I've met a lot of people in my life.
You're not as old as I am.
That's true. The reason why in academia this is more prevalent is because, well, first, kind of like the way this article talks, they could use their expertise as a bludgeon for their own personal hang-ups. They don't merely have to say or feel ashamed. They could actually put something in a book claiming how the Orthodox Jews are primitive, selfish, and whatever other retrograde characteristics they want to attribute to them. So they could actually do something about the reputational damage that their imagination tells them happens to them because of the Orthodox Jews, as opposed to other Jews in their position, in the position of being ashamed, who can do nothing but sulk.
Well, let me make a point that I made it right at the beginning of the conversation, and also point out something else that you not only believe, but have even lectured me about at various times.
Okay.
Now, the point is that I think anyone needs to watch overgeneralizing. I mean, I understand you're pointing to an article from one person. It's not just one person. It's some number. We don't know the number. But I'm saying that I think I know that it doesn't hold for a lot of people who are in Jewish studies who aren't that way. But the other point is there are a good many people in Jewish studies, not all, but there are a good many who know some things about Judaism and some things about Jews, but they don't know terribly much, and they don't know nearly as much as they even think they do. Oh. What I'm saying is that with these people, there are some of them, they don't, the ones I'm thinking about that I have, that I don't have, I have a negative feeling about what they don't know. They should know more if they're in Jewish studies, but I don't have a negative feeling because they fall in the same category as the person that you've been citing. They don't. They don't quite do that. But they also have negative feelings about especially the ultra-Orthodox Jews, and those negative feelings, I've seen this, I've experienced it as a student and as a faculty member. Those negative feelings sometimes, even often, come through just in their conversations. They aren't going to make the kinds of arguments that you've been saying here, that you even point to in this article. But that comes through because they have negative feelings about Orthodox Jews. And even before I met you, I understood, not as well as you understand, but I understood that they either didn't realize or did not want to realize how little they knew of what they were directly or indirectly conveying about Orthodox Jews. They didn't know enough. They didn't know enough. And I'm talking about people who became rabbis, not Orthodox rabbis, but rabbis. Let me give you just one little example that sort of illustrates this from a tiny perspective. I know a good deal about, you know what Hillel is? Hillel Chapters on Campus. Okay. And they're all over. Okay. Yeah. And when I went as an undergraduate, I was an undergraduate at the University of Iowa. I use a personal example again. And I became the president of Hillel at the University of Iowa. And we did a lot of things when I was there that I thought were pretty positive. Okay, now. But I've been in touch with Hillel since, and I paid attention. I know lots of Hillel. Now, it so happens, and I can really argue this point pretty well, that if you look at Hillels around the country in universities, the rabbis, this also holds for people in Jewish studies who become the directors of Hillel rather than a rabbi being the director of Hillel. But right now I'm talking about rabbis. Mm-hmm. Rabbis who have been sent out, their job is to be the director of Hillel. Okay, now, the majority of them are not Orthodox rabbis. And the majority of them, in my experience, and I have a pretty wide experience, have been Reform rabbis. And they are not only Reform rabbis, but they are Reform rabbis who have not been the best of the students at the Reform seminary. And there's a very good reason for that. This doesn't hold for everybody, but it holds for many. The salaries they receive as being a Hillel rabbi is far lower than the salaries that people receive who become rabbis of many, maybe not all, congregations. They aren't very good, and they really don't know very much. Now, let me also strike a contrast. There are also around the country, not nearly so many, but there are also a lot of Chabad houses, with Lubavitcher rabbi on campuses, with Lubavitcher rabbis. Okay, Lubavitcher Chabad rabbis. And I've known a good many of them. And I've seen a good many of them. Now, I'm not arguing that all of them are good, or they're better than others, or other Orthodox rabbis. I'm not arguing that at all. But I am saying this, that in my experience, what Chabad did, Chabad has mostly, not totally, they mostly have sent out younger graduates to be Chabad rabbis, and the Chabad rabbis they've sent out are usually pretty smart, and they also know very well, they know more about Judaism than the Reform rabbis, but they also are very good at knowing how to appeal to students, and we know that Chabad wants to appeal to Jews, especially who are not religious. So I'm telling you that in my experience, Chabad rabbis and Chabad houses on many campuses are far superior to these other rabbis, mainly because they know more. They know more. And that becomes evident to students who don't know much about Judaism, but a student can pick this up. Students pick that up.
So I accept that I have no reason to believe that my experience is a representative sample of the entire population of these people. I got that. Nonetheless, it does need an explanation. And what I'm hearing is, basically, that I'm expecting too much. I'm expecting them, before they have an opinion about something, for them to really know what they're talking about.
I couldn't agree more. But that's not only a criticism of people. That's a criticism, I would tell you, of many academics in many fields and in many academics who teach many subjects on many campuses.
So could very well be that, assuming that it's equally true of the Judaic studies as it is elsewhere, the reason why I notice it in the Judaic studies is because that's the field I know about.
I understand you.
If I'd be a doctor, maybe I'd say it about the medical field.
Well, maybe you wouldn't be able to say it so much about the medical field.
But so it is the Judaic. Yeah, it's also, it's not such an objective kind of science, you know? It's not like
no,
a mathematical
right.
kind of science, pretty much. And they don't really have, you know, I guess mathematics, medicine, pretty much everybody on campus understands, they know what it is, you know, and they have some medical and mathematical experience somewhere in their lives. But Judaic studies is kind of probably a mystery to anybody else, such that the so-called experts in Judaic studies are pretty much the only experience that many people have in Judaic studies. So they're kind of, basically they live a life where they are the considered the experts.
That I could not agree with more.
Which is funny.
That's true on many campuses. And that also is true because many of the students who come, there are a few non-Jewish students who take Judaic studies. But let's say most of the students who take any kind of Judaic studies are Jews. But the point is that still a very great number. I can't say that I know for sure what the percentages are, but I would say a far greater number of the Jewish students who go to universities. And here I'm talking about the ones who may decide they should take a course or two in Judaic studies. The majority of them know very little, if anything, about Judaism. So that means that your point that the person who is teaching Jewish studies may appear to be, for these students, and this is terrible for me, this is a tragedy, may appear to be more of an expert than that person really is.
It's like there's one guy in a room that knows anything about a certain field, and there's nobody to judge whether he has any idea what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And he has his PhD or whatever, and that's it. And now he meets some rabbis or something who are very unimpressed with this guy's knowledge. I can see animosity being generated in this guy's
bosom.
That is
correct. That is correct. And so again, the only warning I would issue to you, my good friend, is don't overgeneralize.
Fair enough. I'm not
That's not true for all.
No, okay, I got it.
Okay.
If you know any not like that, you could introduce me to them. No, but I'm not denying that they exist. I'm just saying that my limited experience with them, and yes, it is limited, but, you know, stuff that I read,
it's limited,
stuff
but it's
that
not
I
surprising.
See, it's, like,
it's not surprising because my experience, it's also limited, but my experience is that the ones that upset you for the reasons you've stated are in the greater number of those who are teaching Jewish studies on campuses and on campuses of universities and colleges. They're in the greater number. I still wouldn't overgeneralize, but they're in the, I would say, of the ones that I've known, and I would say, how many years now? Well, it's been over six decades of my teaching in universities and colleges, in the universities in the United States. So I can draw upon an experience of six decades where I not only have known the few universities at which I've taught, but I've known lots of other as well. And I also ran for years a Jewish lecture series, or it was a Middle East lecture series, but we dealt with a lot of Jewish topics, different topics. And I brought people from campuses and other places all around the country and even overseas. So, I mean, I have 60 years of experience. And so I would say that in my 60 years of experience, I'll repeat what I said, which fits into what you're being critical of, that unfortunately, a greater number of those people who are teaching Jewish studies don't know near what they should know about what they are teaching or presumably teaching.
Thanks for listening to Committing High Reason. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating or review. For the latest from Rabbi Shapiro and to sign up for his newsletter, head on over to committinghighreason.com. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week.